Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, we'll have news about the presidential debate and an announcement about an El Cajon City Council Candidates Forum co-hosted by East County Magazine and three other local media outlets. We'll tell you why there's a shortage of blood and where you can go to donate. A San Diego-based coalition has announced efforts to halt deportation of veterans who served in our military, and we'll have details. Some major changes will soon be happening in downtown Lemon Grove. Learn more on today's show. We'll also have news about a fire in La Mesa that injured a local firefighter. Then we'll have some enlightening news about lightning storms in our region and an astounding record just confirmed elsewhere for the longest lightning bolt ever recorded. Our newsmaker interviews today are with three candidates running for the Grossmont Healthcare District Board. First up, we'll be speaking with incumbent Bob Ayers and challenger Virginia Hall, a retired nurse. Then on the second half of our show, we'll be talking with Jimmy Parker, CEO of the Hospitals Corporate Board, who's now running for the Healthcare District's Board. On Destination East County, hear about events coming up across our region this week, including a Latin Film Festival, Julian Apple Days, Lemon Grove's Community Potluck, Peace Day in La Mesa, and a cowboy swap meet in Descanso. Then we'll tell you about coming attractions, including Oktoberfests in La Mesa and El Cajon, Marshall Scotty's Scare Trail, Haunt Fest on Main, East County's first over-the-line tournament, and a tailgate barbecue cook-off. And finally, on sports, hear about a big win for the Aztecs and a new record set by star running back Donnell Pumphreys. We'll have all these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton will face off on September 26th in the first presidential debate in New York. Lester Holt from NBC will be the moderator. But third-party candidates won't be included because none averaged 15% or more in at least five national polls, the threshold set by debate organizers. Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson calls the debate a rigged game. He is polling nationally at about 8% but reached 14% in a recent Washington Post poll. Green Party nominee Jill Stein, who is polling at 3.2%, has launched a petition calling for debates to be opened up to all candidates who qualified for the ballot in enough states to be a choice for a majority of voters. She says she will be outside the debate location with hundreds of her supporters. Clinton polled at 43% and Trump at 40% when the debate deadline arrived. The door is still theoretically open for minor party candidates to be included in additional debates scheduled, but only if Johnson or Stein can reach the 15% polling threshold soon. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
El Cajon residents are invited to attend a journalism forum featuring candidates running for the El Cajon City Council. The forum will be held on Wednesday, October 5th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Grossmont College in the Griffin Gate Center. Journalists from four major news organizations will serve as moderators. Audience members are encouraged to bring your questions, meet the candidates, and hear their ideas and goals for El Cajon. 10 candidates are running for 3 seats on the El Cajon City Council, including a vacant seat due to Councilman Tony Ambrose not seeking re-election. All candidates have been invited to participate. The moderators will be yours truly, Miriam Raftery, the editor of East County Magazine and producer of this show, Karen Perlman, reporter for the San Diego Union-Tribune, Albert Fulcher, editor of the East County Californian, and Maria Fani, broadcast journalist at Mega Network. This is your opportunity to hear from candidates, ask questions about issues that matter most to you, and learn more about those who are seeking to represent you.
The San Diego Blood Bank wants your blood. The blood bank is experiencing a shortage of blood donations due in part to the Zika virus travel deferral, which asks donors who have traveled to Mexico, the Caribbean, Central, or South America to wait 28 days after returning to the U.S. before giving blood. A blood drive will be held on Sunday, September 25th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Grace Catholic Church's parking lot in El Cajon. All blood types are needed. Current inventory for the universal blood type, O negative, is at critically low levels. To give blood, you must be 17 and older or 16 with parental consent. You must weigh 114 pounds or more and be in good health. It's recommended that donors consume an adequate meal and plenty of fluids prior to giving. A photo identification must be presented upon signing up to donate. Donors are encouraged to schedule an appointment for their convenience, but walk-ins are also welcome. To schedule an appointment, call 619-469-7322 or visit sandiegobloodbank.org. Reporting for KNSJ and East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Getz.
Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has called for the deportation of all undocumented immigrants with no exceptions. But now, a San Diego-based coalition is calling for protection to stop deportations of hundreds or potentially thousands of U.S. military veterans who served our country with honor. A campaign was launched September 18th by a broad coalition including representatives of the veterans community, elected officials, business, labor, and immigrant reform communities. Marine Corps veteran and former California Assembly member Nathan Fletcher, chair of the group, says, "If you're willing to give your life for your country should be willing to give you citizenship." In July, the American Civil Liberties Union released a report bringing attention to many veterans who find themselves unable to return home due to deportation. The report outlines a series of policy changes needed, including congressional and state legislation, federal executive orders, and agency policy reforms. During the press conference, San Diego Congressman Juan Vargas announced legislation that will be introduced to Congress this week. Norma Chavez Peterson, executive director of the ACLU of San Diego in Imperial County, states, "Without question, immigrants who are or have been members of the United States Armed Forces or who have sworn allegiance to the Constitution and who bravely put their lives on the line in services to their country are of concern to us all." Other coalition supporters include Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, David Garcia, and Mel Katz, former chairman of the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce. More information is available at website dischargedthendeported.org. Reporting for the East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Rebecca Williamson.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report from Lemon Grove. Lemon Grove's City Council voted this week to approve the Connect Main Street concept, which will commemorate the city's historical heritage, limit traffic, and create a walkable heart for the city along Main Street between Broadway and Central Avenue. The theme for this portion is Yesterday, focusing on the early pioneer period with 20th century wagons, barrels, brown concrete, archways, period-style lighting and signs, as well as new trees. Northbound traffic will be blocked along Main Street to improve traffic safety and expand sidewalks. When the entire Connect Main Street project is finished, pedestrians will experience periods from the city's past, starting with Indigenous Native American history through the Old West and other eras from Lemon Grove's past. Civic leaders have cited Julian and Ramona as positive examples of other local communities to emulate in creating a historic downtown district in Lemon Grove. Council members also informed the public that Proposition A, the regional transportation initiative that would raise taxes a half cent over 40 years countywide, would double money for street repairs in Lemon Grove, among other projects included. In addition, the Lemon Grove Council agreed to pitch in over $422,000 for Lemon Grove's share of the next-gen regional communication system and to apply for over a $500,000 in water protection funding from Prop 1 water bonds passed by California voters in 2014.
A firefighter was injured badly in a blaze at the liquor store at the corner of Lake Murray Boulevard and El Paso Street in La Mesa Tuesday night. Heartland Fire and Rescue crews responded at 11:15 p.m. to find fire coming through the roof. A second alarm was called, bringing additional fire engines and manpower. The flames were extinguished in 20 minutes, but crews remained on the scene throughout the night. Damage is estimated at $500,000 for the structure and $300,000 for its contents. Adjacent structures also sustained minor damage. The injured firefighter was taken to Grossmont Hospital for evaluation. Cause remains under investigation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
Thunderstorms brought some wild weather to San Diego County on Monday. According to the National Weather Service, 15 lightning strikes were reported countywide from coastal areas to the mountains. The lightning caused some brief power outages and minor fires in some urban San Diego neighborhoods. Dry lightning was also reported, away from rainfall. Speaking of lightning, here are some enlightening trivia facts. Last week, the World Meteorological Organization Committee confirmed a new world record for the world's longest distance of a single lightning flash. The dramatic bolt of lightning occurred over Oklahoma in 2007, traveling horizontally for 199.5 miles. That's roughly the distance from San Diego to Santa Barbara. The World Meteorological Organization also announced another record. A lightning bolt in France in 2012 lasted 7.74 seconds, far longer than the fraction of a second duration for the average flash of lightning. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we're going to be speaking with candidates for the Grossmont Healthcare District. There are six candidates running for three seats, and one of them is open because Betty Stieringer is retiring. We've spoken recently with one of the candidates already, Art Madrid, a healthcare advocate and former mayor of La Mesa. Today we're going to be speaking with incumbent Bob Ayers and challengers Virginia Hall, and a little bit later on, Jimmy Parker, another challenger, will be joining us. And in early October, we'll be speaking with the remaining candidates, Michael Emerson and Priscilla Schreiber. So Bob and Virginia, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Miriam. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Miriam, for inviting us to speak to your listeners.
So I'd like to ask each of you to start by giving us a little bit about your background and share with our listeners why you're running for the office, or in Bob's case, why you're running for re-election.
Okay. Well, thank you. I was first appointed to the board in 2010 from a list of 26 candidates and elected in 2012. The projects that are currently underway for the $247 million bond issue are nearing completion, but we still have a couple of years to go. It is important that we finish these projects on time and within budget so that we can continue to improve the unmet healthcare needs of the East County residents, of which there are roughly 500,000 constituents in the area and about 240,000 registered voters. So it's one of our objectives to continue to meet the unmet healthcare needs, and those challenges are enormous, and we're doing that by addressing the best in quality of healthcare.
Virginia, I understand that you are a registered nurse or retired registered nurse. Tell us a little more about your background and your goals for the office.
I'm really excited to be running for the Grossmont Healthcare District. I do have over 20 years of nursing background. I still hold the license, but I need 30 continuing education to keep it active. I'm excited. My nursing background includes working in hospitals, emergency room, clinics, and research facilities. I've participated on research boards, presented at several national nursing conferences, and have been published in medical publications. All my nursing career has been spent providing patient care and oversight connected to hospitals and their systems. I think the reason that I wanted to run for this, I was one of the 26 that ran against Bob when there was a vacancy. It is a board that works on unmet health care needs in the East County. And I personally would like to see more funds going to the nonprofit mental health care in the East County, as well as working on getting better access to our emergency room at Grossmont Hospital, as well as providing accountability, long-term planning, and quality oversight of the lease with Grossmont Hospital.
Yeah, Bob, for listeners that aren't familiar, can you give them a little bit of background about the lease situation with the hospital? Not everyone is probably familiar with the difference between the healthcare district and Sharp Grossmont Hospital itself.
Thank you. Yes, the lease with the Grossmont Hospital Corporation was extended in 2014 with a overwhelming 86% voter approval to extend that lease for an additional 30 years. And that gave the hospital and the district sufficient time to continue to work towards their development plans, their long-range strategic plans, their core services, and that they're going to be here for a long time. And it's very important that the initial $247 million bond issue be applied, that those projects that are currently underway, the Heart and Vascular Center, which is just gone out to bid, and the surgical build-out portion of that, in addition to the improvements made on the existing facilities, and the cogeneration plant that came online just a couple of months ago.
Yeah, the cogeneration plant was very interesting. That saved the district a huge amount, and the taxpayers, which you don't hear, a huge amount of money, correct? It took the monthly utility bill from about $186,000 a month down to zero, and also significantly reduced air pollution. So that was quite an accomplishment. On another issue, I'd like to ask if either of you have any additional ideas for cutting any areas in the budget in order to free up more funds for the projects that you think should be priorities. Virginia, let's let you take that one first.
Well, some of my background also includes being the chair for the Santee Chamber of Commerce this year, which we do deal with budgets, and I lead the Santee Chamber. However, on the budget with the Grossmont Healthcare District, I have looked at it. I know that we have over $18 million budget, but to know exactly where I'd want to cut at this point, I haven't really delved into it far enough to know exactly where I would cut.
Okay, fair enough. Bob, did you have any comment on
yes,
that?
Yes, there's a couple of things to add, and I understand that from looking on the outside, it's hard to see what's
sure.
behind those numbers,
and I
do appreciate that. The refinancing of the bonds took place a short time ago, and the savings to the taxpayers of $28.6 million in interest cost is enormous. And that is an example of how good government can work when you have some financial experience in the background, of which I bring to the board. But more specifically, on our grants and scholarship budgets, and sponsorship budgets. We actually increased that budget a couple of years ago mm-hmm. to address more of the unmet healthcare needs through various nonprofit organizations in the community. We continue to focus on that. We recently went outside of the budget and granted Mountain Health Empire $1 million to complete their healthcare facility in the East County, will reduce, we believe, significantly the number of patients that have to travel from the backcountry to the emergency room, and many of those patients can be treated right there.
Oh, that's good to hear. Full disclosure, by the way, I should mention that East County Magazine's Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service is sponsored in part by the Grossmont Healthcare District, helping us keep people safe and informed, so we certainly appreciate that, but we do want to disclose that to our listeners. On another issue, though, while Grossmont has made a lot of strides with beautiful new facilities and doing what they can to improve things in the emergency room, it is still the only major emergency room serving the entire East County. And so, understandably, it can be very crowded. Sometimes waits are still very long. What more can or should be done to reduce overcrowding in the emergency room? Virginia, we'll start with you.
Well, and that's one of the things I want to take a look at, because I have had constituents that have actually mentioned the emergency room experience, as well as I've had personal experience with that. And I think, since Obamacare has come into fruition, I think it has impacted our emergency room at Grossmont Hospital. And I think what we need to do is take a look at our situation there and see if we can cut down the wait times. And, you know, part of that is also the accessibility of beds in the hospital. So a lot of it goes into it that I personally have to, you know, take a look at, talk to people, see what's going on. But I know that that's an issue, and I know that that's something that I'd like to see if we can't work on solutions to.
Bob, how about you?
Yes, Virginia's hit on a very important issue, and I think it's imperative that we address those needs. That hospital emergency room, from my understanding, is one of the busiest emergency rooms in the state of California. Hospital has taken an aggressive approach to improving the throughput. They've looked at opening an additional urgent care center on the campus, which I think will be a help, but also it's an educational process to some degree. Many of the patients are using the emergency room as their primary care physician when, in fact, it's not a true emergency. It could be treated at an urgent care center. So it's up to us to get that message out as best we can in an educational format to inform the public of you can have quality medical care. You don't always have to use the emergency room.
I'm curious. The Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare, for better or worse, it certainly had its, you know, good and bad points, I think most people would probably say. But one of the things it was touted for was that it could help ease, you know, traffic in emergency rooms, because if more people had health care and could see a primary care doctor early on, then maybe they wouldn't all be flooding the emergency room with, you know, waiting too late to go in with these serious issues. Has that, in fact, happened? I mean, have you seen an impact? And if so, what type of impact at the ER since the Affordable Care Act went in place? And for that matter, we've got some people running who say they want to either expand it and others saying they want to repeal it. What might the impact be on the hospital, especially the emergency room, if either of those scenarios were to take place?
Well, I think that the impact in the emergency room has probably been greater after the enactment of the Affordable Care Act. We're seeing more patients maybe that don't have insurance, and they continue to use that emergency room as their, as I said before, their primary care physician. Again, that's an educational process. Mm-hmm. The flow of dollars for reimbursement is being cut dramatically. Yeah. And one of the other things that we do out of our budget is the intergovernmental transfer. We refund back to the Grossmont Corporation the $1 million a year to help offset the reduction in the Medicaid and the Medicare reimbursement rates. Those rates are still going to be under attack, and they're being cut. And it's making more and more difficult to continue. You do need to be profitable.
Yeah, exactly.
We can't continue to run into loss.
That's true. Virginia, I'll let you weigh in on this one.
Well, I think Bob is right. Education is very important, and getting more access to the urgent care and educating patients who don't have primary care physicians how to get one. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times people don't know where to go because they haven't established a primary care physician, and then they end up coming into the emergency room as the only alternative they know of.
One of the initiatives on the statewide ballot this time around potentially could legalize recreational marijuana. I am curious if the district is or should be gearing up to handle whatever impacts that could have on the healthcare system, on emergency treatment, or perhaps educating the public things they ought to know. Has the board addressed that issue yet, Bob?
Yes, we have. Just at the last board meeting, we all voted to oppose that initiative. This is still, I believe, a Schedule One, Class One drug.
It's a gateway drug at the
federal level. It's an issue that we would see continuing to impact the quality and access to medical care. I am personally opposed to that, and will support the opposition. There is some discussion and some science about the effects of medical marijuana. I'm not a scientist. I'm not in a position to really comment on that. But I would be, as well as the board last week, opposed that initiative completely.
Okay. Virginia, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I would agree with the board. I think it needs to be addressed at the federal level before it can come to the state, even though I know there's a lot of people wanting it out there. I think for treatment with patients medically that have chemotherapy, I think that's something that we need to take a look at the research and see what it's showing. But personally, I think that it has a tendency to encourage people with depressions to abuse it. And I really am opposed to it because I think there's better ways to deal with that.
Thank you very much. Recently, the hospital faced allegations that it violated patient privacy with an undercover camera that was in the operating room as part of an investigation into alleged drug theft. And the videos revealed some women, some female patients, unclothed. Just today, I don't know if you've heard the news yet, but as we're taping this, the Medical Board of California announced it was dropping all of the charges against the doctor who was accused of taking the drugs, and he claims he was targeted because he was a whistleblower. I would like to know what your comments are on the whole situation, and if you think changes in procedures or policies should be put in place to better protect patient privacy, even if there is a legitimate need for an investigation. Virginia, we'll let you go first on that one.
Well, I think privacy is, it's a high priority. To have a camera in an operating room and have an exposed patient, I mean, if that was me, I would be livid. And I think there's other ways that you could get evidence to prove the physician was taking drugs. I mean, there's other ways to do that. But I think privacy, I mean, they've almost gone overboard with privacy issues. But I think in this case, the camera shouldn't be in the operating room and where a patient is exposed.
Okay. Bob, I'd like your comments on that. And also, if you can tell us when the board first became aware that the hospital was doing this with the camera.
I think the protection of patient privacy is paramount. If a patient wants to have the camera in the operating room, that could be their choice.
Mm-hmm.
I first became aware of this situation several months ago, and I know that the hospital has addressed it and has taken appropriate action.
They have reached out, I understand, to the patients whose privacy was compromised and so forth. So you learned about it after it was a done deal, not before the camera was...
Well, by saying a done deal...
I would say after this hit... not before the cameras were placed in the operating room.
That's correct.
Okay. Right. I would like to ask each of you if there is any other issue that I haven't asked about that you would like to discuss and share with our listeners. Bob, I'll let you go first.
Access to quality health care has to be at the forefront of what we're involved with in relationship and the public-private partnership between Grossmont Hospital Corporation and the district.
Do you have specific ideas for improving that access?
Well, I think just as an example, I also sit on the Association of California Healthcare Advocacy Board and Finance Boards. The district was just awarded a transparency certificate. It's the highest certificate that can be awarded by the ACHD. We're very honored by that, and we're very honored that we are transparent to the public in every way, shape, and form that we can be to meet that very exacting criteria. So we'll continue to be transparent. We're going to be forefront, and we will address those needs as they come to the board in a timely and efficient manner, all the while protecting our fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayers to protect their investment and their use of the taxpayers' funds to complete the projects.
Okay. Virginia, how about you?
Well, I think, I think one of the issues that is impacting the East County is mental health issues that are out there. I mean, it causes a lot of homelessness, and I think we have to look at better ways to get these people help. It's a tough situation because there's rights of patients and people that you can't force patients or people to come in and get help. But you want to have it accessible so that they can, when they are ready, to come in and try to get help.
Yeah, that's a very important issue. You mentioned homelessness, and certainly I know that, you know, mental health issues are responsible for many of the police incidents that we have countywide. Mm-hmm. So it is a very crucial issue.
Well, I think also some of the things that we need to do is make more AA meetings available, Narcotic Anonymous, so that those, a lot of times the dual diagnosis is a circle of problems. And I think by having hopefully in some way giving more grants, scholarships for that kind of medical unmet.
That's a good point. Does the healthcare district have the ability to get grants for helping people with medication costs who maybe can't afford it? I know we had a member of our own staff for a while that was having a lot of trouble affording heart medication after a quintuple bypass, and, you know, others who may have trouble paying for their bipolar medication or EpiPens, which has been all over the news. You know, you may have allergies, but who can afford $500 for the EpiPen? So is that something that is within the power of the district to do anything about?
Well, through some of the grant funding, those very issues are addressed by the individual recipients of the grants. And as Virginia said, the mental health and behavioral health issues are very, very important to this community, and they're growing at a rate that is being very difficult to manage.
Yeah. Your thoughts on the medication cost issue, Virginia?
Well, I think there's programs out there. It's just a matter of getting the people that are having the issues to admit and come in and get help. You know, I know that Medi-Cal is available and other programs that will provide the medicine. Now, with someone with a medical problem like you mentioned, mm-hmm. their insurances should be paying for something like that, or at least a good portion of it. And I know there are a lot of programs out there through pharmaceutical companies that will provide alternatives, medications that they'll provide them at a much lower cost than normal.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly can be a big problem for elderly people who maybe have six or seven different medications, and even if insurance is paying part, if you're living on Social Security, that doesn't go too far. So it is a big societal issue.
One of the important things about the Affordable Care Act was the readmission rates. Mm-hmm. If a patient is discharged and then readmitted within 30 days, it's a very costly and non-reimbursable process.
Yeah.
So oftentimes you discharge a patient, you give them the medication, and then they don't follow the steps.
Right.
So the Grossmont Hospital has instituted a plan to make contact with those patients on a one-on-one basis to make sure that they are following up with the proper medications.
Good idea.
And it's a great idea.
And has that reduced the readmission?
That has been a tremendous help in getting some of those patients conforming and back into their own medical plan, and then not having to come back in for readmission.
Very nice. Do the two of you have endorsements that you would like to share? Virginia?
I'm excited that I have Joel Anderson has endorsed me, as well as both the mayor, Bill Wells of El Cajon, as well as Randy Vopel from Santee, the mayor. I've also had the Republican Party of San Diego, also the Police Officers Association, and the Conservative Republican Assembly has also endorsed me, along with all of the Padre Dam board members have endorsed me. I've had
quite a list. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a list of many people that have endorsed me because they know that I have integrity, and they know that I can be a problem solver, and that I can do the job.
Okay.
And I think, you know, they realize I'm the most qualified.
Well, Bob, I've got to let you get a word in here.
Well,
tell us about your endorsements.
Thank you. I do have a couple of sponsors and endorsers. County Supervisor Diane Jacob, Silliman Brian Jones, the Republican Party of San Diego County, Grossmont Healthcare District Board Emeritus Bob Yaris, Grossmont Healthcare Corporation Board Member, Emeritus Professor of Public Health, San Diego State University, Dr. Michael Petticord, Grossmont High School Governing Board Member James Derringer, and also the El Cajon Police Officers Association. I'm very honored to be endorsed by such a distinguished group of...
I want to ask each of you if you have anything else that you'd like to add that I haven't already asked you about today, and we'll let you have the final word. Bob, you can...
Well, thank you, Marion, for the opportunity to have the little interview and get to the public, our qualifications and beliefs and standards of which we want to carry forward. I look forward to continuing to serve for another 4 years and seeing these projects through and on budget and completed timeline.
Okay. Virginia?
Okay. Well, I think, you know, I've been going and sitting at the board meetings and following what's going on. And I think Bob Ayers has been doing a great job. Mike Emerson has been doing a great job. And I think that I would make a good addition to this board with my medical experience and my business background also.
I want to thank both of you very much for taking the time out to join us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you. Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, and we are back with our continuing coverage of the Grossmont Healthcare District race. Now, as we mentioned earlier, there are six candidates in the running for three seats. One of those is open because Betty Stieringer is retiring. The other candidates, we've spoken earlier today with Virginia Hall and Bob Ayers. We spoke previously with Art Madrid. We'll be speaking in the future with Michael Emerson and Priscilla Schreiber, and today we're very honored to have with us Jimmy Parker, who is an accountant as well as the past president and treasurer for the Grossmont Hospital Corporate Board of Directors. Jimmy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So let's start by having you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and why you've decided to run for the Grossmont Healthcare District Board.
Well, I've lived in La Mesa since I was 12 years old. I've been to the hospital a number of times for different reasons. Both of my daughters were born at Grossmont Hospital. When I was asked to join the corporate board, I gladly went on, and I've been on that now for 8.5 years. My term is up the end of May, but I'm not ready to quit working for the hospital. It's become, and I know this term is overused, but it's become kind of a passion of mine. I know a number of people over there, most of the key staff, a number of people at the Sharp District, and I'm just ready to keep going.
Okay, very good. What do you view as the key issues facing the Healthcare District Board that you would hope to address if you're elected?
Well, we're almost done with the bond issue and all the construction that's been going on over at Grossmont. So I think it's maintaining the quality and improving the quality as much as possible at the hospital. In addition, the district supports a number of health-related organizations, and I think it's important to make sure we pick the right ones, the people that are deserving, and to watch out for the taxpayers' dollars. The hospital belongs to the taxpayers.
True. One of the issues we hear over and over about that's been a problem through the years is overcrowding at the emergency room. And while certainly some strides have been made, there's a beautiful new emergency room that's been built, for example, but it's still the only hospital ER serving all of East County, really. And you know, the waits can sometimes be long. Do you have any ideas for reducing that overcrowding at the emergency room?
Actually, I do, and they're already in place. I've set up a Facebook page for my campaign. And my first comment on there was, do you know how many people visit the ER? What's an average of 297 per day?
Wow.
That's $108,000 people each year. And that's the biggest complaint that we have at the hospital.
Yeah.
We are opening next year an urgent care center.
Well, very good. Now, where will that be?
It's going to be next door on the medical building just to the west of the hospital, mm-hmm. just to the west of the ER, and our goal at this point in time is that should take away about 50 per day from the ER, and it's obviously not for people who need to be in the ER, but it's people for things that don't require the services of the emergency department, such as colds and flus and those kinds of things that happen.
Yeah, that seems like a very good idea. I would imagine that that will also reduce the costs for patients, too. It's certainly less expensive, generally, to be treated at an urgent care center than in an emergency
room. That's correct.
I would like to ask what the impacts, if you've looked into this, of the Affordable Care Act have been. You've, you know, been around a lot of years. What the impacts of that have been on the district and the ER, for better or for worse, and what might be the impacts if it is either repealed or expanded as the different candidates, the different parties have proposed, depending who wins in November?
Well, being a nonprofit organization, mm-hmm. we treat everybody the same, whether they have the insurance, don't have the insurance. And the Affordable Care Act changed a number of things. A lot of patients that were a no-pay have now become at least something for the hospital.
Yeah.
And a lot of Medi-Cal has changed into the Affordable Care Act insurance coverage. It doesn't by any means cover the cost
right.
of the care, but it's a little bit better than it used to be.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. That's moving in the right direction, perhaps.
I think so.
Okay. Very good. Recently, the hospital faced allegations of violating patient privacy when an undercover camera was placed in the operating room as part of an investigation into allegations of drug theft by a physician. The videos revealed some female patients unclothed. And just today, the Medical Board of California, I don't know if you've heard, but they dropped charges against the doctor who was accused of the drug theft, who contends he was targeted because he'd been a whistleblower on something in the past. I would like to know, as somebody who has, you know, headed up the hospital over there, the hospital board, what are your comments on that whole situation? And do you think changes should be made to better protect patient privacy in the future?
I wasn't very involved in the entire situation. I have seen films of things that took place that the doctor was accused of.
I am
aware of the privacy issues. We were waiting somewhat on what the medical board was going to do. I'm very disappointed in their decision. I think it was a wrong decision, but that's the one they made. We currently have this particular individual in a situation to where he will not be working at the hospital, at least for quite a while, if ever again. My goal is never again. And the privacy issues, they were also looked at, and there's a separate lawsuit going on about the privacy issues.
Yeah, some of the patients.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I'm not really allowed to talk about the details of that.
Okay. Can you tell us, however, when you were you aware of the cameras being placed in the operating room before that was done, or did you learn about that at some point later in the process?
We learned about that after we made our accusations of what was taking place by this particular physician, which was related to drugs.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. There is an initiative on the California ballot this fall that, if it were approved by voters, would legalize recreational use of marijuana. And a couple of the local cities, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, have medical marijuana clinic initiatives that, if they were passed, would presumably open the door for more of those. I would like to know your opinion of those initiatives. And is the hospital, or the healthcare district, rather, is there anything they should be doing to gear up in the event it passes, you know, whether or not you oppose it or not? What might the impact be on the district and on the hospital?
First of all, I oppose the initiative. I think we have enough issues to deal with without bringing another one into the picture. The impact it could have on the district or the hospital, I think, is very unknown at this time. I am aware of some of the medical clinics. I was asked to do some accounting work for a couple of them, which I declined. And I just think we're going to have to wait and see what happens. If it passes, we'll have to see. I have no clue what impact that might have.
Yeah, maybe an opportunity to educate the public about perhaps whatever risks there could be with that and what they should
be aware
of.
Well, I'm sure we would do things like that. Yeah. We're doing that all the time.
As an accountant, I'm curious if you have ideas for any budgetary improvements for the district if you were elected. Do you have ideas on areas where you might perhaps cut expenses one place to free up money for other kinds of services or programs that you favor?
I'm not familiar with the district budget very well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm extremely familiar with the hospital budget, which is basically the overall thrust of the healthcare district. And the hospital and the staff are working extremely hard in these strange times when you're not paid by a fairly large percentage of people to maintain the quality of care and at the same time cut costs as much as you can.
Yeah, they definitely are challenging times.
It is a
entire
challenging
healthcare
time, yes.
Business. Who would you consider to be your most important endorsements in this race, Jimmy?
I think they're all important. The number one that I've listed on my campaign materials is Bill Walton. And the main reason for that is, well, there's a couple.
Helix athlete and Hall of Famer.
Helix athlete. I played basketball with Bill.
No kidding.
And Dave Grunstrom, who is the current president of the corporate board, is very good friends with Bill. And Bill is an amazing philanthropist.
Yes.
He cares a lot about a number of causes. Not just in East County where he grew up, but all over the county. So he's my number one. Then I named a couple of physicians that I've been very close with. and as I said, Dave Grunstrom, and then Randy Lennick, who is a current board member of the district, has endorsed me.
Thank you for sharing that. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about your candidacy or what you would like to do if elected that I have not already asked you about?
The only thing I would say is that I'm not done doing what I can do over at the hospital. 9 years seems like a long time. It has absolutely flown by for me. I've loved every minute of it. I think I might have missed 2, maybe 3 meetings in 9 years, both on the finance committee and the board. And I just want to keep going and improving what we've already started and what I've been able to do on the corporate board.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you very much, listeners. If you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Jimmy Parker, who is a candidate for the Grossmont Healthcare District Board. And we'll be posting, by the way, the interviews we've done with all of the candidates on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. We're pleased that all 6 of them have actually agreed to do interviews. Some of them we've already done, and the rest we'll be completing in the next week or two here. Jimmy, thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Rebecca Williamson.
And this is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County.
This week's Destination East County includes a Latin Film Festival, Julian Apple Days, Lemon Groves Community Potluck, Peace Day in La Mesa, and a cowboy swap meet in Descanso.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions, including Oktoberfests in La Mesa and El Cajon, Marshall Scotty's Scare Trail just in time for Halloween, Haunt Fest on Main, East County's first over-the-line tournament, and a tailgate barbecue cook-off.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
As part of Latino Heritage Month, Grossmont College is presenting a Latino Film Festival with public screenings of films that explore Latino culture and history. The films will be shown every Tuesday at 7 p.m., starting this week through October 11th in Building 26, Room 220. For a schedule of film and details, you can visit the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District's website at gcccd.edu.
The annual Julian Apple Days Festival offers a weekend full of fun for the whole family on September 24th and 25th. It's part of the longer Apple Days celebration. The 2-day festival will be held at the Mangini Winery, featuring apple displays, music and dancing, an antique tractor display, children's games and activities, gold panning demonstrations, a beer and wine garden, food and merchandise vendors, contest, and of course, apple pie. For more information, you can visit julianca.com.
Lemon Grove residents are invited to meet your neighbors and local business owners at the 2nd annual Lemon Grove Community Potluck Barbecue. The event will be held on Saturday, September 24th from noon to 4 p.m. at Lemon Grove Park. Hot dogs and hamburgers will be provided. Guests are asked to please bring a dish to share. For more information, you may call 619-573-8334.
If you're hankering for some saddles, tack, western wear, or other cowboy gear, you can mosey on over to the Cowboy Swap Meet outside of William Lang Leather Works in Descanso on Sunday, September 25th from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Multiple vendors will be offering items at this annual event, including Western and English tack, saddles, bridles, silver bits, vintage cowboy gear and collectibles, Western clothing, horse blankets, halters, and more. Food will be available. Proceeds benefit future farmers of America.
The Interfaith Council of La Mesa is celebrating its 3rd annual International Day of Peace in La Mesa on September 25th at 3:30 p.m. The event will be held in Aztec Park as part of a global effort. All are welcome at the event, which aims to bring awareness to the need to promote peace, unity, and goodwill to both local and global communities. This year's theme, as declared by the United Nations, is the Sustainable Development Goals, Building Blocks for Peace. The event will feature representations of peace through words and song. For more information, you can visit interfaithlamesa.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Willkommen! You're invited to the largest Oktoberfest celebration west of the Mississippi.
the Mesa's Oktoberfest from September 30th to October 2nd. This community event is spread out over nearly 6 blocks in La Mesa's downtown village and features hundreds of exhibitors, family-friendly activities, German food, music, dancing, authentic outfits, games, and, of course, beer. For more information, you can visit the LaMesaOktoberfest.com.
Just in time for the Halloween season, Scotty's Scare Trail will be open at the abandoned Marshall Scotty's Amusement Park in El Cajon for a full month every Thursday through Sunday from September 29th to October 30th between 7 and 11 p.m. The trail is rumored to be haunted by ghosts of former park employees. This year, you can see the bumper car carnage, slaughter trailer, and haunted park offices. Visit the frightening Ferris wheel and brace yourself as you walk through the remains of the death coaster. This attraction is not recommended for children under 10 or those subject to seizures. Pregnant women, infants, and small children are not allowed. For more information, you can visit ScottyScareTrail.com.
The German-American Club of El Cajon will host its annual Oktoberfest over 2 weekends, September 30th through October 2nd, and again on October 7th through 9th. This Oktoberfest features a band from Germany, authentic German food from Bavarian pastries to an ox on a spit, plus German beers and folk dancers. You can dance to oompa-pa music, polkas and waltzes, and let the children enjoy a kid's zone. The German-American Club is located at 1017 South Mollison in El Cajon. To learn more, you can visit GermanClubSanDiego.org.
You're invited to step back in time and enjoy an authentic 1800 to 1840s Rocky Mountain fur traders encampment at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous from September 30th to October 9th. Day visitors and period campers are welcome. The Rendezvous of Mountain Men includes demonstrations of primitive survival skills, including cooking, tool making, tomahawk throwing, archery, and black powder shooting. The event will be held at the Mataguay Scout Reservation in Santa Isabel. For details, you can visit LagunaMountainRendezvous.com.
Santee's Chamber of Commerce invites you to Oktoberfest, along with a party in the park October 1st at Town Center Community Park West in Santee. Oktoberfest will kick off at 9 a.m. with East County's first ever over-the-line tournament. Teams of 3 can sign up to participate in the double elimination style tournament, which will include both a men's and women's division. Attendees can then head over to party in the park from noon to 4 p.m. to cool down with refreshments in the beer garden, get lunch from food trucks and vendors, and jam out with continuous music courtesy of DJ Eddie V. Both events are for ages 21 and over. For details, you can visit SanteeChamber.com/OTL.
Santee Lakes invites you to Stockzilla on October 1st and 2nd when all 7 lakes will be stocked with 3,500 pounds of catfish. There will be tagged fish and surprise giveaways. The most stocking will be in Lakes 6 and 7, which are reserved for campers. For more information or to reserve a campsite, you can visit SanteeLakes.com.
Marty Stewart, a member of the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, Tennessee, and a multiple Grammy Award winner, will bring his band's blend of traditional country, honky-tonk, and rockabilly music to downtown El Cajon at Prescott Promenade Park on Friday, October 7th from 5 to 8 p.m. Stewart is the former lead guitarist for Johnny Cash. He played bluegrass mandolin for Lester Flatt at age 13 and later performed with Willie Nelson and other well-known country stars before gaining fame on his own. Bring your dancing shoes to dance the night away under the stars. For more information, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Heartland Fire invites you to bring the kids to an open house at Fire Station 6 in El Cajon on October 8th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can meet the firefighters, see emergency vehicles, safety and health displays, and more. For more information, you can go to heartlandfire.org.
You're invited to fire up your barbecues and get your best recipes ready. The 7th Annual Spring Valley Tailgate Barbecue Festival is looking for participants in its annual barbecue competition. This event is sponsored by Cali Comfort Restaurant and the Marcel Walchef Youth Empowerment Organization to raise funds for youth sports. The barbecue competition will be held on Sunday, October 16th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Troy Street in Spring Valley outside Cali Comfort's restaurant. Besides sampling barbecue, you can also visit a beer garden, shop at street vendors, enjoy live music, and plenty of family fun. To learn how to enter your amateur barbecue team, you can call 490-0684 or visit CaliComfortBarbecue.com. That's CaliComfortBBQ.com.
The 5th Annual HauntFest on Main will take place on Main Street in downtown Okahon on October 21st from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Costume contests will be held at the Main Street stage. There will also be carnival rides, crafts, games, a car show, candy challenge, kids zone with outdoor movies, face painting, a pumpkin patch, inflatables, rock wall, and performances by local dance groups. In addition, this Halloween-themed event features live music on two stages, including Out of the Ashes with Linda Ray from 5 p.m. to 7:15 p.m. and The Amazing 80s All-Stars from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. For more information, you can check out hauntfest.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is Liz Albert with an Aztecs football report. Danelle Pumphrey rushed for 220 yards and 3 touchdowns, and Christian Chapman threw for a career-high 3 touchdowns of his own as San Diego State overcame a late rally in a 42-28 win over Northern Illinois Saturday in DeKalb, Illinois. The Aztecs improved to 3-0 for the first time since 2011 and just the second time in the last 35 seasons. SDSU also finished September with an unbeaten record for the first time since the 1981 squad won 2-0 through the first month of the year. San Diego State jumped out to a 28-0 lead when Chapman found Michael Holder for a 33-yard catch and run with 6:19 left in the second quarter. The host Huskies, however, who came into the game as winners in 35 of its previous 37 home games, came roaring back with 3 straight touchdowns to close the score to 28-21 with 7:46 left in the third quarter. Pumphrey then took over, scoring from 33 yards out on the first play of the fourth quarter, and after NIU answered with a 7-yard touchdown pass from Ryan Graham to Shane Wyman, took his next attempt 79 yards to put the Aztecs up 42-28. Trey Lomax then picked off Graham, and SDSU held on for its 13th consecutive victory. Pumphrey, who ran for a career-high 281 yards with 3 touchdowns last week in a 45-40 San Diego State win over California, finished with 220 on Saturday on 23 carries. Highlighting his game was the 112 yards and 2 scores on just 2 attempts in the fourth quarter. Pumphrey's other touchdown came on a 46-yard run to put the Aztecs on the scoreboard. It was the fourth career 200-yard game for Pumphrey and 24th 100-yard game, breaking Marshall Faulk's SDSU career record. Pumphrey also moved into first on the school's all-time list in all-purpose yards and rushing attempts in the game history. San Diego State won its 5th consecutive road game, its longest streak since winning 19 straight from October 30, 1965 through November 7, 1970. It was the Aztecs' 11th win by at least 14 points over the 13-game winning streak.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.